You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for
here
City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally redeems himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. Then it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis
City. Oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
The heat is on. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of Minneapolis City SC. As always, I am your host, Nate, joined by the sickliest co-host you could ask for in the summer. In the summertime. I can't believe the summer cold has struck. It's John Bizworm over here. John, besides your obvious infirm state, how are you enjoying the soccer this summer?
Yeah. Summer sinus infection can go fuck itself. Summer's supposed to be fun and like where you go outside and you enjoy yourself after being stuck inside all for three seasons. And now I'm stuck inside for a full week. Hopefully I'll be ready to call the game on Saturday and be okay. But so bear with me if I cough a little bit. But dude, we've had a couple of 6-point weeks for Minneapolis City. And that's just awesome. And I'm super encouraged that we're going to talk about in a little bit about what we might see on the horizon for one of our two senior teams. So, excuse me. And it begins. So we'll talk a little bit about the Granite City MC2 recap game. We'll talk then next up what we have for UPSL. The Dakota Fusion recap, the Joy recap, the MPSL North spin around, and then finally our Sioux Falls match preview. So we got a lot of soccer to talk about today. Of course, on a day where I sound terrible and I'll be coughing a lot. So awesome. So let's just get right into it.
Yeah, man. Hey, I believe in you. We can do this.
Well, I'll try to cough in between segments instead of during. How about that?
Sure.
So this was a big one for the Rookery as they went on the road of sorts, I guess you could say, up to St. Cloud, where they were successful in their last trip versus the university team. But as we know, things are a little, you know, kind of different, and the test is different week in and week out in this UPSL Midwest West Conference. So they ran up against Granite City, a mid-table team that has decent quality, but just hasn't been able to get the results. As far as the team that we set up there, starters in goal, Mitch Wolf, Logan Huber, Ethan Anderson, and Will Orser in the back three of the Parenti 3-5-2. Luke Lindsay, Scotty Heinen, Wes Lawrence across the middle, Abai, and McCray Drong. McCray Drong making his first start and in the center of the field. And then the dynamic duo, we'll call them, of Cole Schwartz and Derek Ullman. And then as far as the bench goes, Adnan Jill, your guy, Nathan Streets,
yeah,
Adam King, Jacob Popkin, Stephen Wright, Abdi Kadi, and Josue Batule. So another great cohesive squad. We're starting to hear some of the same names. So the match itself was very back and forth. Not a lot to really report on early. The Prunty 3-5-2 saw really good spells of possession against what was a very stingy defense, an organized defense of Granite City, and some real quality actually looking to build the attack, trying to keep the ball versus the dump and run that we've seen in pretty much every single game in the UPSL this fall. Mm-hmm. This summer. Excuse me. So at the quarter hour mark, off of a city corner, ball kind of bounced around the box, found leading goal scorer Cole Schwartz in the right place at the right time, which is basically what he seems to do, to tap in a short distance goal. And the Rookery are up 1-0, scoring that early goal. So maybe they finally heard me.
Yeah, finally, right? That's what we like to see is an early goal to get the team started off right and get that momentum going from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. So seeing that momentum starting to build a handful of minutes before the half, Cole, once again, kind of the focal point here, dropped back into the midfield to find the ball. Nice turn on his defender, went on a mazy run through a couple different defenders, only to see his shot turned away by the Grand City goalkeeper. But with some quick reaction, his strike partner, Derek Ullman, was able to find the end of it. And the Crows are now up 2-0 in a first half. And the score line did not change before the first half whistle.
That's awesome. And one of the things that we've noted over the course of this year is as that strike partnership has solidified, they move around, and sometimes it's Cole that's in the more advanced position, sometimes it's Derek, but either way, they're dangerous from anywhere from 30 yards out, right? I mean, whether
they just seem to find each other, you know, like they, and whether it's, you know, one gets on the other end of the other one's shot or it's an assist to the other one, they just seem to always be moving collectively together around the field, which is really great to see for your two forwards in that formation.
Absolutely. And they're both equally as dangerous. So it's awesome to have that kind of an attack solidified for this team right ahead of playoffs starting in a couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So second half started, it was pretty much the same as the first 15 minutes of the first half, with both teams kind of trying to keep the ball, slowly building up an attack, not really any need to kind of put the foot on the pedal. But it looked, but basically, not much to report here from a scoreline perspective up until the end of the match. There was a scary moment where Wes Lawrence had a pretty heavy collision, ended up doing some muscular damage to his calf. So he is, he went to the hospital, no broken bones, which is good to hear. But he has a muscle injury that may see him out for maybe a few matches. So hopefully Wes gets back on the field too. Awesome. But just before the death in stoppage time, a Granite City forward was able to kind of find some space, slotted one past a diving Mitch Wolf. And it was 2-1. Luckily it was in stoppage time, and that's how it ended. Final whistle came quickly after that goal, and MC2, the Rookery, is still on top of the table, unbeaten in league play this year, and another 3 points, Nate.
Interesting that this is there have been a few games like this where MC2 hasn't really. It's like sometimes they'll find themselves just like hitting the gas and scoring six against the Brooklyn Knights just because they can, and sometimes it's like Prenti will spend the second half when we've got the game pretty well in hand, just making sure that the team is going through the motions and doing what they should, right? Playing almost the way
like
they
like a training exercise.
Exactly. That, like, you know, you're going to switch the personnel up and make sure that in these situations, everyone knows what the system is. Everyone can kind of make sure that the game plan is followed. And there's really not like any need to put the foot on the gas, I guess. Until there is, we haven't really seen a lot of games where we've had to fight for the victory, besides maybe that FC Minneapolis game, right?
I would say the inter game, yeah, the inter game.
But you know, it's interesting to see, like, game in and game out, which ones Prunty decides just let the Rookery fly, and which ones he wants to make sure that there's that like you said, he's treating it almost like a training to make sure that discipline is still there.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to train in some principles, not against yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've had kind of the ability in a few of these games, and this seemed to be like one of them. But, you know, all indicators were that Granite City was probably one of the best teams we've actually faced from a collectiveness, where they defended well. Like I said, they didn't dump and run. They tried to keep the ball. They really tried to vary up the attack. So they just haven't been lucky on the score sheet. So, another solid MC2 victory as they continue to find their identity. I think they've kind of found it, to be honest with you. They put up some pretty massive results after that draw versus Inter in that first match of the campaign. But topping the table with 5 wins, you know, that lone draw, and a very impressive 19 goals for and 5 against. So
that's nice. So we had no keys to victory last week, John, when we were like, when we were basically saying, it's just the UPS. What are we going to do? But with City still sitting undefeated, the key moving forward has to be keep those victories coming. Only two games left in conference play. When does the team start to look ahead to the UPSL playoff soccer?
I think it's already happened.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. It's tough to look too far into the future when you kind of got some tasks at hand, but yeah, you can start to do that. And I know, looking at the team sheet that I've seen for this Saturday's game, a lot of new faces that are in the team side, a lot of different attacking options from both the wing and the striker position are getting calls up. So it'll be interesting to see. But next up, like we said, for City is Saturday. They take a trip to Vlora, which is just right across town from us. The division's reigning champion. So
really,
they won in 2019. They also had like Ibsa Hamid and Lionel Vang and a whole bunch of players that no longer play for them. So they were the reigning champions. But this year, really rough go. Two wins, no draws, and four losses. Sitting sixth place in the division. They've only scored six goals in six games while giving up nine. So they may not score a lot, Nate, but they also don't get scored on a ton. So if City can keep the pace that they've been going on and the typical defense that we've seen that kind of maybe gives up one goal, but that's about it. Potentially we could see, Nate, and I was kind of alluding to this earlier, as they bring back 3 points, they're inching very close to perhaps a regular season title with a game in hand over and pretty much all the tiebreakers over the Brooklyn Knights that sit just behind them. So you never know. We could have some good news to report. Maybe not next week, but maybe the following. The game again against Laura is Saturday, June 19th at 7 p.m. at Richfield High School.
Glad we've got other stuff to do that night, but still.
Yep, but there'll be a lot of parents going.
That's right. Something to keep your eye on.
Absolutely. So as far as that goes, City 2, the MPSL team, in one of the longest trips of the season and one that just happens this year to be midweek, which totally sucks, the fellas headed up to the Fargo-Moorhead area of North Dakota to take on a team that's really kind of – been cast away from an identity perspective as what we called like the new Aris. And then they went and beat Aris like we talked about. But bottom of the table team that has a lot of good pieces, just can't quite put it together. As far as the starting lineup goes, not a ton of changes, but some interesting changes. Matt Elder in goal, Matt Murakami, Jonah Garcia, and Max Kent in the back line. Miles Stockwood-Willis got the start. That was his first start of the year. Mm-hmm. And then Max Siegward dropping back into the central defensive midfield spot with Dom Mesgin replacing Max at the number eight. Brian Lopez getting a little bit of a breather. And Artie Perrin's coming back into the starting squad. And then up front, Lionel Vang on the left wing. And then Kevin Andrews making the start, and Mito Youssef at striker. So, like I said, a couple key players that are either coming back into the squad or are getting their first starts in either at all this year in Miles Stockwood-Willis or Kevin Andrews, but also people like Dom Meshin getting the start, and then Arthur Perrin's coming back in too. So kind of mixing some things up a little bit. And then from a sub perspective, Troy Luwege, Aiden O'Driscoll, Justin Oliver, Charlie Adams, Ian Smith, Gato, Javier Juarez, and Mark Bokeen were the guys on the bench. So did you get a chance to watch this one? No, I did.
I watched as much as I could, kind of on and off over the course of the night. You know, tough with baby duty, but it was fun to watch.
So I thought that the match was an interesting one, as I fully anticipated the Fusion to bunker down, considering they coughed up goals on the reg the first time these two teams met, the Nelly.
Yeah.
But they came out with a lot of high, surprising pressure, and it was surprisingly successful. I think it was actually smart on their part from a tactic perspective, given the 90 plus degree heat and the 3 hour van ride that city had to deal with. So that was a little bit of an early surprise. And I thought it kind of caused Minneapolis City some fits. Couldn't quite get into the flow of the game. They were possessing the ball, but not the typical dominant style of possession that we've seen. An early fusion chance was dealt by goalkeeper Matt Elder, who we saw some quick distribution to Murakami. And that, I think, was what sparked the city possession and attack, as opposed to kind of the disjointedness that we had, which, again, it's hot as hell and long van ride. It's kind of tough to just say, hey, go out and do your best, you know, like.
Yeah.
So, but that, I think that quick distribution from Elder to Murakami really sparked things up from a possession standpoint, got us on the front foot finally. And it was around the 19th minute when the ball then came through the middle to Lionel Vang and received a pass about 20 yards out. He found that half yard of space through that quick footwork that he's known for and just ripped a right footed shot past the diving fusion goalkeeper to open the scoring. So nice early goal, kind of a breath taker, if you will, to get us to kind of calm down and get back into what we do best.
It was very sweet. You love seeing, I mean, Lionel is so amazing in tight spaces, and it is, like you said, it is just the quick footwork that gives him that half yard and that tiny That's little opening. Needs. It's all he needs. It's amazing.
So after that, it was pretty much all city possession. I think the fusion kind of burnt the candle on both ends in the first 15 minutes. and it basically that possession turned into a patented Mito Youssef goal, just kind of out muscling his defender, you know, spinning him around and placing a rooftop shot through the ear hole of the fusion goalkeeper at the 43rd minute mark in the half. At that point, Nate, it seemed like we were in for another goal fest. But then moments later, Arthur Perrins got on the end of a nice pass from Kevin Andrews on a good diagonal run in behind. And he worked a good 1v1 and then found a goal just before half. So we're looking at 3-0 to the good. Nice early goals in a first half. We haven't seen that in a while. Super encouraging. But then worst case scenario happens. 1 minute later, the typically sturdy city backline just coughed up a really bad ball. And Fusion kind of had guys in the right spots, and they were able to slot one past Elder, who really didn't have much to do up till that point, and I don't think really could have made the save. It was kind of just caught on our heels, and they made us pay. So then we go into the half 3-1.
Yeah, that was one of those times when I wasn't watching, and I checked back in and I was like, wait, where'd this goal? They scored? How did Dakota score? And I had to go back, and it's just a rough goal to watch. Like, yeah, you said, really bad giveaway. And what do you, part of me wants to chalk it up to you have a long drive. It's super hot. It was really, really, really hot that weekend or that week. And you're on the turf, right? And it's just like, this is summer soccer, right? These are the conditions that we're going to play in for the rest of the season. So we kind of need to get used to it, but it's tough. After that long of a trip to get out and just be ready to play in that heat. But at the same time, I'm totally comfortable giving up a fluke goal here or there when we put three past this team in the half. I mean, last time when they were here, I think we were only up 1-0 at the half, right? We still ended up, scoring six. So I wasn't feeling awful about it, but it was totally understandable, at least to me. Before mental we talk error about for sure, but totally understandable.
Before we talk about the second half, at any point in time this season, Nate, have you ever seen us after conceding a goal play worried?
Not really.
I mean, even against Duluth, even against Joy, when you're giving up goals to the top half of the teams in our division, I've never seen us get, you know, antsy, you know, start to really press the issue. I know we can, but it's always like we're gonna find a way.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny you bring it up. The times that I've seen us play worried we're early in the game, and we'll talk about this against Joy, when there's no, you know, when we're not really sure what the teams are going to throw against us, when we're not really sure what Duluth is going to look like, that kind of thing, that's when it's like, ooh, we're not playing as aggressively as we maybe could. But yeah, once we get scored on, it's like bear down.
Yep, absolutely. So the second half was pretty much downhill for City, seeing lots of the ball. Medu captured his second goal of the day in the 54th minute, tossing more bodies forward. Fusion, Talisman, Pike found a rebound off of a cross, got their second goal. But I think at that point, I think like City got kind of angry. Like, we let these guys score two on us. You know, like it seemed like there was a little bit of anger in how they played the rest of the way through. They were, you know, they ramped up things. So the 50-50 balls, they were winning. You know, we were trying to attack more. It was almost like, oh, you're going to score on us? All right, we're going to get another one. And that we did, as Mark Bokeen came on and capped off the night with a nice piece of individual work, and then put his left foot through one in the 79th minute. And that's how it ended, Nate. Game, set, match, hit the Vans, get home, another 3 points, 6-point week for both teams.
Oh, did we drive home that night?
Yeah.
Gross.
It's on Wednesday. Yeah,
I guess you got to, right? But yeah. Still, that's a long drive. That's a lot of time in the van for a day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, the expected result, I think the fact that Dakota snuck two goals past us was, or snuck, yeah, an extra goal past us was a surprise. But again, weird day, a lot of travel, hot as hell. City can't clean sheet them all. You know what I'm saying, John?
Yeah, absolutely.
Leading up to this, we talked about three keys to victory in the week before. Let's see how we did against those. The first one was travel strong. Feels like we did that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked and when we say travel strong on a midweek game in heat to North Dakota, what we mean by that is we just don't want to fall flat. And I don't think we fell flat. I think we did. We played as strong as we could have given the circumstances. Obviously, you know, you score five goals, you give up two, totally fine. Would you like to have those two back? Absolutely. But I thought it was still a strong team win. Got some goals from some different folks. You know, Lionel and Medu seem to have been scoring collectively together in games. But to get to see, Mark Bokeen sneak one in. Already score one, you know, it's nice to kind of have those other folks, entering their name into the score sheet. Number two, control the narrative through possession, score the early goal. I think we did that. Lionel scored that goal before the 20-minute mark, and it really was the tone setter. And we finally then were willing to, like I said when I was kind of recapping that one, it took something to kickstart it, and that kickstart was Matt Elder distributing the ball quickly instead of typically methodically trying to connect with his center backs, which I know he likes to do. But finding someone who was, you know, trying to get forward in Murakami, I think that was the key to finally get us back on the front foot from a possession standpoint. And then finally rotating the roster. I think we talked about it with the starters. We talked about it with some of the goal scorers. Just showing that depth and rotating the roster to keep guys fresh, considering we had to go on the road. I thought we hit on all of our points this week.
Yeah. And almost, John, as quickly as City got out of the car, we were up against that fiery new addition to the NPSL North, Joy Athletic.
The perky upstart.
Joy is performing decently this year, pretty much like we expected, winning against Sioux Falls and Dakota. They drew Aris in kind of a surprise comeback from that lacrosse squad, and then they've lost to Med City and Duluth. The question going into this season definitely being around how that squad of young talent's going to hold up to the rest of the league. And we got our first up close look on Saturday. Like, we've been able to see Joy against Med City, being able to see Joy against Duluth. We've been watching that tape, and I've been interested in those games, and they've looked all right. But then, you know, then again, when we play Duluth always turns it up a little bit more. When we play Med City always tries a little harder. So it's like, really, this was the first opportunity we got to see the reality of Joy Athletic. Starters for Minneapolis City, Matt Elder in net, coming off of, that's his second game on the week, which is crazy. Charlie Adams, Jonah Garcia, Max Kent, and Miles Stockman-Willis was your back line. We had Steve Ian Smith holding down the defending midfielder role. Max Stegwart captaining with Brian Lopez rounding out the midfield. And your forward trio of Lionel Vang, Will Kidd, and Mito Youssef looking dangerous up top. Game changers coming off the bench, Troy Luwagi, Jack Berry, Kevin Andrews, Dom Mezgian, Gatto was on the bench, which is cool. Aiden O'Driscoll on the bench, very cool to see him finally, and Justin Oliver. As we said last week, Joy, in the games we've observed, really dangerous, strong, speedy attackers. E-Man, Iwe, is someone that is their leading goal scorer. He's got to be up close to one of the leading goal scorers in the NPSL North. He can just put him in. He combines really well.
I think he is the leading goal scorer.
Yeah. I mean, he scores at least one goal in almost every game he plays. He combines really well. We saw him combine really well with Darley Florville from Washburn High and our old friend Whitney Brown, creating that nice front line. Joy was really capable of battling. They clawed back to almost earn that draw at Duluth before they lost in the last few minutes. And their attack did not have any quit in it against us either. It's just the thing we needed to test was, what's their depth at defender look like? What's their bench look like? Can we wear this team down? I think that was kind of, as the game wore on, clearly the city tactic. I'll tell you what, John. So I was there at the stadium. You were sick. You're still sick, which sucks. But I was there. And I'll tell you, I was surprised at the lack of rotation in some of these high-effort positions. When I saw Miles Stockman-Willis go out to start second game after playing 90 in Dakota, and like you said, driving up, driving down, not an easy thing to do with, and then get back and recover and do it again. I don't know. I was a little worried, and especially because he was lined up against Emmanuel Iwe, their best attacker. Like, having Steve and Brian Lopez available was really nice to be able to rotate that midfield, but three out of four defenders had just played 90 minutes 2 days before. So that sucked.
Well, what you saw with what Miles was able to do, and also Charlie, when they switched Iwe to Charlie's side, was they, even though Iwe is such a dynamic attacker and someone you have to worry about, what they were both doing, and I'll give Miles, you know, the credit for doing it for a larger portion of the game, was with his spacing and where he was up the field, it was pinning Iwe back, making him having to play more defense. And where his mazy runs had to start from were in his own half, as opposed to
deeper,
breathing down your throat in an attacking or in your defensive third. So I thought that was a good way to equalize it, but I think you're right. You know, it's tough to go up against the best attacker in your division when you're fresh off 90 minutes and 90 plus heat.
Yeah, and they are as dangerous as advertised in the stands. Like I said in the last segment, it was more like I was more worried before any goals were scored. As I was watching the game unfold, as I was watching the early action, there was so much speed up top with E-Man against Miles. Darley Florville was looking good. They had a nice triangle they were creating with a couple of their midfielders. Michael Folstead, while he didn't make a ton of mistakes, was kind of that anchor to that triangle, being able to distribute to either Darley or E-Man, and he did a good job there. All it took was a few instances of them overloading the back line with some attackers, and we were behind early. Down 1-0 as E-Man makes that run, crosses into to Darley Florville, and he finds the net. I noticed then after that, Chuck comes over to that side of the field, and that seemed like a good choice. And he was able to, using his NPSL veteranship and his
chazzle,
dazzle, he was able to bottle up Emmanuel for the rest of the game, serviceably. Yeah,
I thought that. That Florville, like, his goal was a nice goal, but he was wide open on the 6-yard box. And it was because everyone was so worried about what Iwe was going to do that they just lost track of him. I actually thought he didn't have that great of a game. Florville is, I think he finally ran into grown men playing defense against him, and he had some really bad giveaways, and he tried to lean too much on just putting his head down and running past people. and he was running into two and three defenders. I would say he scored a goal, but I don't think he was as dangerous as he's been against some of the other teams in the conference.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see that because his effectiveness did wear down as
it wore
the
down
game
real fast.
Progressed. Yep.
Yeah.
So, I'll say this though, John, with Joy, is in those early minutes, even, you know, as the throughout most of the first half, they took an approach opposite Med City, and like similar to what you notice with Dakota, they came right at us, and that caused some issues. It's something I don't think Minneapolis City is used to. It's something hopefully that we have to be ready for. We had, I would say, the luxury of probably about abundance of respect and caution from the teams that we have faced, right? Teams sitting back and expecting us to come at them and hoping to absorb that attack and turn that into a counter. Is, I think those days might be over as we turn around and enter the second half of the season. And now it's teams that have almost nothing to lose. They have to come right at us and try to disrupt our rhythm and our back line. And Joy did that same thing. They made it clear that any mistake in possession by the defense was going to mean an immediate counter. Anytime we gave it the ball deep in our territory meant that we were under immediate attack. So that was initially something I was a little bit worried about, but City was able to frustrate that approach with veteranship, with calm possession-based soccer. And I'll tell you what, the joy of the people parents that were sitting behind me, you know, it's kind of a lot of those internationals, old guys used to come from, and kind of how they've been around town. There were a lot of guys, a lot of Colombians behind me that were a little upset about. They were a little upset about City's possession-based attack or possession-based play. They were screaming about how boring it was. But I'm going to tell you what, this is a parent fan base that obviously has no idea how to win in the NPSL North.
because that
possession-based approach really wore that Joy of the People team down. Almost, I would Minneapolis City, like a boxer, hung back, took what their opponent had, wore them down, and really struck when that timing is right. And you could tell by the end of the first half that Joy was tired. They were tired of chasing the ball, tired of running back and forth across the field. And another thing that is clear at the level of soccer these parents are used to watching is a mom in the crowd was kind of giving advice into the universe, like talking out loud, speculating that maybe they need to start subbing because those boys look really tired. And
you
I was
know,
like,
you know why they're tired? Because they can't get the ball.
It's you're 42 minutes into the first half. You can't just take your best players off quite yet.
I think you make a good point. They came at us, but what they weren't ready for is how we can quickly break down with 2-3 passes, a press, and it's because we've been training in our own press against ourselves for months. And we know how to be calm in the back line and move the ball and basically bait you into a disjointed press. How many times have we seen it where teams have tried to press us and only their front four are pressing and we make two passes and they've expelled all their energy trying to press with guns blazing and we just pass right around it. I thought that Creighton and Fulstead in the middle were extremely exposed in that press. Fitness level, they weren't able to keep up with the activity of the midfield three, and they weren't able to quickly close those gaps down. So by the time they were able to even defend against Stigwart and Lopez, they were going at them with the ball instead of having to turn around them. And I believe that's why you saw the earlier subs. I think Riera came on for Creighton. He had some okay times when he had the ball, but he was absolutely exposed defensively and we were getting all of our chances running past him.
Yeah. He came off. We'll get to this in a second because we've got two goals to talk about really, John.
Oh yeah, we do.
Two goals in quick succession, I think was the best example of what we're talking about as that press was worn down and as our players were able to get more and more space into the joy side of the field. they were really tired of absorbing that attack that we that over and over and over again. Once again, Lionel Vang twice in a week with a banger of a goal.
He's able to rip that shot.
He's able to score off the corner. It was kind of interesting. It was almost like he was positioned anticipating a clearance because mm-hmm. there was really no one from City making a back post run, but that's where the ball went. And it was just kind of headed out right in Vang's direction. He was able to settle on the ball and rip a long range blast. Look, almost looked like a toe strike that was just rising straight up. It went underside of the bar, across the line, bounced around, and that was the first City goal. Second one comes mere minutes later as Will Kidd, the tireless Will Kidd, exposes that tired young defense of Joy the People, and he's able to scorch his defender for an easy goal to give City the lead going into half.
Yeah, I mean, it just showed, like, okay, you want to throw everything at us? We'll weather the storm, and then we'll show you what we can do after that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was that disjointed pressure right away. What I also, if I'm Joy, I'm not going to be okay for the remainder of the season if I want to try to climb into the second place playoff spot. I'm not okay with trying to lump balls forward to a solo Whitney Brown. If you're going to play that style from your back line and you can't break teams down, Iwe has to be your target striker because he can get on the other end of those long balls and he's more active. And if you're going to just hide him on a wing and then have him try to beat one-on-one defenders, that's okay because he can do it. But how many times did City collectively get behind the ball and organize defensively quickly where Joy didn't have anything besides sideways and backwards passes? And then they reverted into hitting it long to basically our back line because Whitney wasn't going to be tracking those down.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. And I think you move Iwe's size to the middle too. And all of a sudden you've got a, especially those two tall center backs too. Like, you get those three guys in the box and you've got a pretty decent set piece option too. So
yeah,
I agree. Like, I think as we saw Florville get a little tired and lose his effectiveness over the course of the game, we'll talk about this in a second, but we saw Iwe somehow never wore down and was able to maintain his effectiveness and put a late scare into Minneapolis City. So I think he's gotta be the guy that everything runs through. And it's really hard for everything run through that one corner on the right.
To the casual observer, you look at that and you're like, wow, 3-2, we got a second goal back. But you're like, it's in stoppage time and there is absolutely no way in hell we're giving up the third goal.
Yeah, so that's true.
So you know, take your cake go eat it. That's fine. But there was no way they were winning that game. There really wasn't. And I'm not saying that to be conceited at all. It just was not going to happen. There was no way that, I mean, we put on Jack Berry as another defender. Gatto came on to spell some tired outside defenders. We put in players that were, and we were attacking still. So it was a late stoppage time goal that didn't really mean anything except for in the goal differential category.
There were some second half fireworks as Charlie Adams gets shown a slice of cheddar, issued a yellow for dissent. And the bench also slapped with the cheese. Looked like someone had kicked Justin Oliver in the ankle.
Yeah,
once there was a dead ball. Yeah, off no, the ball, yeah. And yeah. That of course sets Justin off, and then when Justin goes off, everyone goes off.
Yeah. Yep.
So why eventually did the yellow start flying after all that? What was it where the ref had enough? And well, it's pretty rare that City gets a bench yellow. What was said? I don't know. I was there and I didn't hear it.
The first one, I think Justin has a lot of gripe. He was so far away from the attack and he was basically the third runner, and the guy was already behind him and just kicked him, you know, from behind. Obviously it wasn't anything with like huge malice, but that's definitely a yellow cardable offense that didn't happen. And how three referees missed that one, it's kind of tough. It means that the sideline officials weren't doing their jobs, looking for the things off the ball, and they were focusing on the ball. Because the center ref, I thought, did a good job. I thought that he kind of kept his whistle in his mouth for both teams throughout the game. But as far as the second one came because Dominic Meschin played a fantastic curling ball into Kevin Andrews, and he was clearly taken down with no effort at the ball from behind. And it should have been, in my opinion, the referee said that there was another defender back. I get that, but that was a clear goal-scoring opportunity, regardless of the fact that there was another defender somewhere in the area. Kevin was one more touch away from shooting that, and he got taken down from behind. That should have been a red card, in my opinion. And that's where the bench gets the yellow card, because they were, you know, they had every right to be angry, because no ball was even no foot to ball from the defender was contact was made. And that's where you got to not be afraid to pull out the red card, even late in the game.
Yeah. I thought that was another, parents in the stands moment. That was super funny. as of course the heckling began behind me, you know, talking about how that didn't deserve a yellow, cause he got up and he's okay. And then the funny thing is that there is one parent who is really very into soccer, but he's also very cerebral. And he turns to all the other fans, and he starts explaining to them rule by like to the letter of the rule why exactly that was a yellow, and why they were totally justified, and it didn't just because he's not hurt doesn't mean he doesn't get a yellow. And I'm like, wow, all right, there you go, buddy, way to stand up for City. But I'll tell you what, John, you got to give it to Joyce players. They didn't quit grinding.
They definitely fought.
Yep, like you said, E-Man's speed finally broke through at the end to pull them within one. City was already making a number of defensive substitutions to make sure that was about as far as they were going to get. A 3-2 victory, I'll tell you, a little less comfortable than I would have liked.
It should have been 5.
Yeah, but a win is a win, and we're still top of the table with 0 losses, 0 draws. So let's talk about keys to victory on this one. Talk about how we did. First, you said don't fall into the traps. There were some traps.
Well, before we get into the keys to victory, I do want to make a respectful analogy. Joy of the People's roster makeup and their performance in the league table is showing almost mirrored signs of what we'd had in our first PLA season, where and even in our first NPSL season, where we have a lot of young players that are very talented, but to put it together for the grind of what this level of soccer is, they just don't have it. And we didn't have it when we first came in either. So there's definite signs of improvement. I hope that they can learn on this and stick around for more than a couple years, because I think that it would be a really good, you know, rivalry to have, especially because we can have an away game where we don't have to travel to North Dakota.
So that's always a bonus.
The encouraging thing for them is what I'm trying to get at is this is what happened to us in our first year, and you have to learn from it, and you can't keep, as you're building a team, you can't go back to what you feel works because it doesn't. You have to build your team for how you win the conference. And that's what we've done in the past 3 seasons. And we're going to continue to do, no matter what league or what conference we're ever in, we're going to do our homework and build our team to be successful in it. So I hope to take the advice and know that I'm not trying to shit on them, but we were there, and there's definite quality in that team that you hope sticks around, and they add to it, and then they just learn from their mistakes. But anyways, keys to victory. Number one, you said, don't fall into the traps. Yeah, there were some early traps, that pressure you talked about. I thought we handled it okay, you know, going down that goal. We didn't panic, and then we got back to what we do best. I mean, there were stretches of time where I saw, you know, 8 to 12 pass sequences where Joy didn't touch the ball unless it went out of bounds. So I think that we definitely didn't fall into the traps that we could have early. Number two, I kind of touched on a little bit, leaning on that experience. We just kept the ball, and you know how you don't lose a game, you keep the ball, and then you score a few goals. And I thought that it basically showed that, you know, some of the experience elements that stood out to me was, like, you know, Jonah Garcia stepping on the ball and pulling it back when typically in the past, Jonah, maybe Miles Norville, maybe Max Kent tries to clip that long ball because it's on. We were content in pulling the ball back and just being like, you know what? We don't have to attack right now. Just because we can doesn't mean we have to. And that's some things that a team like Joy will learn once they figure out, you know, get a little more experience in the conference. So anyways, we definitely did that. I think varying things up in the final third, I thought that Will Kidd's movement was unmatched. He had acres of space. I thought he did a great job of not only, you know, when the ball was on his side making the runs, but when he was the second or third runner, super active, and that was causing fits on the outside. And he was fouled a number of times, and so was Lionel Vang, fouled, you know, in clear opportunities to advance. And I think that the one, I think, is it Duran? I think he got a yellow card for foul, for persistent infringement against Lionel Vang, because Lionel just kept beating him because he was varying up where he was kind of coming from. So I think we did our jobs. So the first time through a league plus one game, and City is undefeated. Nate, what does this mean as we round the bend on the season, and how does the rest of the league look at, you know, look in the rear view?
Looks so good. It looks so good, John. Exciting result from this game week's fixture, dude. So you and I were talking about it before the show. We watched it Wednesday night, just the other night. Duluth beat Med City in Duluth. Yeah, that was kind of a game that we should have been looking forward to, but it snuck up on me. All of a sudden, I turned on Twitter and I was seeing some game updates. So I popped my Kuju on the laptop and watched the last 20 minutes of that game, and that was exciting.
Yeah, but stupid fucking schedule this year. They play each other again this Saturday.
Yeah, they did it to themselves. Duluth has been inconsistent on the road, John, but they were comfortably back on the steely shores of Superior, and they really stuck it to the Medics after Tyler Oliver, our boy, got Med City on the board super early within the first 10 minutes. Duluth battles back with a Westfield goal, and the game was 1-1 from about the 30th minute all the way to the 80th when Duluth did what Duluth does, and they scored a late goal on a set piece. And that 2-1 victory means that you and me in Minneapolis City are 6 points clear of our nearest competitors, with Duluth still a game behind the field, somehow having only played six, thanks to their bizarre schedule. That bizarre schedule, like you said, means that the return fixture of that Med City Duluth matchup is Saturday already. So they're playing each other Wednesday, and then they're doing it again on Saturday. It's rife with drama. Now that both teams have two losses, neither of them is really going to want to accept a draw. They need to win. One of them needs to win to keep putting pressure on Minneapolis City to keep winning.
I mean, realistically, I hate to say it, if someone's going to win that game, we want it to be Duluth and not Med City to then still stay 6 points ahead and hopefully be 9 points ahead at that time before that result comes in. A draw would be fantastic. I was hoping for the draw in this past game on Wednesday, but that would have been fantastic. But yeah, I mean, that game, I bet you, if I had a dollar to bet, I'll bet you that the game in Rochester is going to be hyper physical, lots of yellow, lots of cheddar, and it's going to be a battle, because I mean, Joy is not far behind them, both of these teams.
No.
And they doesn't Joy plays both of them still, right?
Joy still has their game, their second half games against, or their second fixtures against both of them, yes. And they're actually one or two surprise wins away from sneaking into the top three, top two. Like both of those teams, Duluth and Med City, have shown themselves to be extremely beatable at times. When you go back and watch the Duluth game against Joy the People, their Joy's speed on the counter in that first matchup was making those Duluth defenders look like fools. Like I don't know if they didn't have all their guys back or what was going on, but they had whatever Joy was doing, Duluth had no idea what it was. It was like watching it was like watching the Richmond FC pull off the Sandman in Ted Lasso.
Well, here's the thing. I'm just bear with me while I pull up the fixture here. The thing is that Med City, let me pull up their schedule here. Med City front stacked the schedule with Sioux Falls, Dakota Fusion, Joy, Aris, then us, which was our first test, where we showed them how to play soccer for 90 minutes. Yeah. Then they turn around with Sioux Falls again. The remaining half of their season is Duluth, Fusion, Aris, Joy, and Minneapolis City. That's a tough way to end your season. And then you go and look at Duluth. Duluth has Med City, Joy, us. So in the next three games, the conference will be figured out.
Yeah.
Interesting. And it's tough for, it's Wednesday, Saturday. Duluth is in a tough spot. Med City is, sorry, I had to click back over here. They are Saturday, Friday, Wednesday, Friday. So they're playing games within 2 days of each other.
All over the damn state. I mean, that's a lot of travel too.
Yeah. And I think they only have 18 players on their roster. So that's tough. So what I'm trying to get at here is that even though they're waiting for their players to come back in and try to build cohesion quickly, they have screwed themselves from a logistics perspective with these games towards the end of the season. And it's starting to show with Med City. They were a shell of the team that we saw in the first half against the bottom half of our conference. Then they ran into us and didn't have anything really against us. And then didn't really do anything against Dakota or Duluth either. So I look for maybe them to start falling down the table and looking at Duluth starting to climb up if they can win that game against the rubber match on Saturday. And then if Duluth can beat Joy right after, that Joy-Duluth game is going to be the critical one, I think. If City goes into that game, if we pick up 6 more points, the magic number to secure a playoff spot is 27, and we're at 21. So if we can win 2 of our next 3, it's going to be real tough for whoever that third, fourth place team is.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to point that out. That was kind of my next bullet is what did we say the magic number to make the playoffs are, and it's 27. And we're already at 21 points, and we still have to play Aris for a second time and Sioux Falls for a second time.
Yep, exactly. And 28 wins the conference outright.
So, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So the math is looking really good for City. And really, it's going to be popcorn time as we watch Duluth, Med City, and Joy Athletic fight for potentially that second spot. Yeah. How great. How amazing.
I mean, it's why you play the games, because you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, if you're looking into a crystal ball, you look for City to at least get 6 more points. but you gotta play the games, Nate.
That's right. So games yet to play. Minneapolis City versus Sioux Falls. Man, what do you say about this? Like, just when you thought Sioux Falls would be, it's like Sioux Falls is going back and forth between the doormat of the conference and the scrappy wild card. Like, they dropped points to Aris, they drew them 1-1 away, but then, you know, that, and that's a week after they come on late and beat Duluth. Like, what is going on with this team without the benefit of like a bad field or insanely hot prairie winds? What can we expect from Sioux Falls this weekend? Well, I'll tell you, Limmer, who is actually really good, Stevenson Storm and Brendan Haggerty, right, are still dangerous. They're still dangerous both on the attack, and I think Haggerty's a midfielder. There should be 3 guys that City needs to look out for if they make the trip. So that City backline needs to stay vigilant. But John, I'll tell you what, these Sioux Falls games are made for our midfielders to maintain possession. They don't really have much going on besides that. They've got that one big defensive midfielder, but that's not going to break that possession game up. And there's always our forwards that are ready to strike. Mito, Will, Lionel Vang, should be able to continue their hot seasons. Like, I don't know if we've had a front trio as good as these guys in the years that we've been Minneapolis City.
Nate, we still haven't seen an injured Matt Gibbons, Nick Hutton. We haven't seen Sam Thornton. We haven't seen Eli Goldman. Like, there's just an abundance of attack this year. I mean, it's incredible. But you're right. I don't think we've seen a more productive front three. I do want to mention, though, Nate, that Tyler Limmer is actually serving a three-match suspension for a bad challenge in the Med City match, causing backup goalkeeper Gal Ilyashev some serious facial fractures that actually required surgery.
Really?
So he's out for this game against us on discipline. But we wish Gal speedy recovery. You never really want to see anyone get injured like that.
That's awful.
And especially in this short summer season, it's super hard to have a serious injury and then try to make it back, even if you're in the playoffs. So hopefully, if you're listening, Gal, which you probably are not, but if anyone from Med City cares to listen, we hope your goalkeeper has a speedy recovery and gets back on the field. So keys to victory, Nate. Some interesting ones this week. I was getting a little creative.
Oh, that's good. We got to mix it up.
Yeah. So number one, keep it fresh.
Yeah, just like your keys to victory.
Just like Gunner from Southside Barber Lounge giving you a nice tight fade. You got to keep it fresh. with such depth on our roster and now being that second leg through the table, it will be great to start tossing some of those fresh bodies I mentioned, like some of the guys that have come off of injury that are just chomping at the bit in the next 2 weeks to be able to get back in against these struggling teams that are only about 15 to 16 deep, maybe. If we can start to freshen it up a little bit while still being dominant, I think it's going to make Coach MVB have some real tough decisions when it comes to the back half of the year and hopefully a playoff game. But those are good tough decisions to have. Number two, show Sioux Falls excuse me, our game. In the previous meeting, we talked about it between the two. The field was awful. It was cold as hell, windy. And we kind of had to throw out our possession style of soccer to the way of scrapping out a victory and just grinding something out. So can we use the friendly turf at the Nelly to be that difference and show them, exactly, like, this is actually how we play? and then finally, this one's not very creative, but I'll tell you why it's creative in a second. Keep that clean sheet. The City defense almost refused to give up a goal in the first three games, but in the last four, have given up six. So yeah, we goal differential is in our favor right now because we've scored 20. I believe 20. Let me pull up the thing again. We have scored 26 and given up six. Joy scored 21, given up 14. So we have a plus 20 goal differential, and the next two competitors behind us, Med City, has a 10 goal differential, and Duluth and Joy are tied at seven. So we're looking at the tiebreakers. It would be really nice from a regional perspective if we can start to pick up some more of those clean sheets. It's going to be harder to come by in the second leg, which is why I want to focus on it as a key to victory, because if we can do that, you could see the Crows up 24 points, four games remaining after this one, and that would be absolutely huge. I don't think we've ever had 20 points going into the last four games, let alone 24. I think we've always hovered around that 17 to 19 range, if I was going back and doing my research. So having 24 is pretty darn good.
Yeah, holy crap. Even that year we were undefeated, there were a couple draws in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. This is the hottest start of our MPSL career.
To the moon, baby. To the moon.
To the moon. To the moon.
Kickoff is scheduled for 7 p.m. at the Nelly. Head on over to mplscitysc.com for tickets right now. I guess we'll just see you Saturday.
Yeah, I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, I'll be there. I will be there. Fresh off of my son Gus's birthday party. So I'll be just flying in last minute trying to get all my ducks in a row. But that's all we got for this week's show, folks. Thank you to our new show sponsor, footballstadiumprince.com. Everyone got a tightly curated Zoom setup these days. You know, your living space is set up to show, you know, a nice look and feel, show your best if you're talking to clients or coworkers. If you're looking for the right props to say, I love soccer, but in a mature, cool, interesting adult way, tear down that poster of Ronaldo or maybe that Maxim poster that's hanging up in your basement, Nate. Tear down that poster.
Classic poster of Eliza Dushku in like soccer socks. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Luckily, this isn't a video show.
I've never read Maxim.
Head on over to footballstadiumprints.com and just browse a litany of awesome looking stadium designs, including, of course, the Edor Nelson Field, home of the Crows, all available to be printed on everything that keeps you classy. And what's better, City fans, you can head on over to footballstadiumprints.com, check out the new Edor Nelson shirt and print designs, and use code CROWS10 and save 10% off your order. That's CROWS10, and you can rock the home of the Crows or any lesser team. And remember, Football Stadium Prints ships from the U.S. So it's footballstadiumprints.com. Father's Day is right around the corner, so get that Crow fan something for Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Football Stadium Prints, again, is a UK-based company, but they do drop ship from the United States, so no additional international shipping charges, which is awesome. If giving back to the community means a lot to you, maybe it's time to give the club that loves to give back. Minneapolis City is 501c3. It provides a safe, reliable, and fun environment for young people to play the beautiful game, like our upcoming summer camps, as well as our...
Oh, future... I guess there's no summer camps.
Well, yeah, those just got canceled. Yeah, so sorry, folks. What would have been our upcoming summer camp? If people would have signed up for it, we would have had our summer camp. Anyways, I digress. Consider a tax-deductible donation to a truly city focused organization. I did it. This season is in full swing and we are tossing a lot of soccer news your way, but if there's anything you think we missed, send us mail. It's easy to do. Hit us up on Twitter at the People's Pitch or through email at mcscpodcast@gmail.com. all questions, comments, and concerns are welcome. And finally, you can always complain to Dan at mplscitysc. If you're listening, resident content creator Bryn Shank, I did get your question, and we will address that on next week's show. We got a Bryn question.
Throwback.
So thanks for joining us this week. That does it. I'm John. That was Nate. It's double game week, and it's going to mean two reasons to celebrate. So get on out to the Nelly or head on over to Ridgefield High School and watch MCQ play, and we got those.